Sorry for this last minute shift today. There was some issue, so we had to shift here. But I hope it wasn't a problem for any of you. It's good. So let us begin with some meditation as usual. Letting the body and the mind settle down. Separating myself from all thoughts of the past and the future. Withdrawing myself from all thoughts and experiences of this physical existence. And turning my attention inwards. I go deep within myself. Deep within to the center of my being. I experience my entire existence merging, converging into a point of light. It's as though this physical body and the physical world has disappeared. All that remains is the light of the Spirit, a point of infinity. Indivisible, indestructible, this is my original and eternal existence, that energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. My eternal existence of light. I see myself as just a sparkling star. And I see myself in the dimension beyond space, beyond time, in that world of light. In that land of the Supreme, and I see myself in the presence of the Supreme, a sparkling point of conscient energy. just like the soul, but infinite in his qualities of peace and power. Purity. I experience his invisible light falling upon me, filling me up from deep within. Filling me with the power of peace. The power of light. The power of silence. I, the soul, am bathing in the light of God. Two beings of light. Lost in the experience of eternity. The deep security of eternity. This light and this silence, holding on to this peace, I allow myself to gently return back to the awareness of this physical existence. Sitting here in this room, I see myself seated in the center of the brain, the eternal spirit, the sparkling star, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. Looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. This body, my costume. And I, the eternal actor, that plays its part through the costume of the body. I, the soul. The being of light, the being of peace, Om Shanti.
Some of you sitting outside might want to come inside. There is a place here. There is a little place in there.
We can do the Danish hygge, they say. Hygge.
Yeah, I guess. Which one would like? Hygge. Yes.
There is actually a place here for anyone who wants to come. There is a place here. There is one place here. Actually, one more person can bring this chair, meditation chair, and come over here if they want. There is place for one more.
Yeah.
This is a real squeeze, but it's possible. In the Guinness Book of World Records, there are many interesting records. Some of the records are how many people can you squeeze into a car? So I think the record is something like 60 or something in one small car. So if they can squeeze in so many in one car, you can squeeze in. But once again, apologies for this little last minute shift for today. But that is how it is. And I hope we can manage. But welcome to today's talk. And as a result of this talk, we are getting to experiment with some things. One is this mic system. We've never used it before in the center. So we get to experiment. I hope it works well. If there is a sudden loud noise, please don't worry. It should be okay. So, this month we have been exploring the role of the self in the group. How does the self express itself, experience its own self in the group? We have used one model that is very widely used in psychology. I've mentioned this in the previous session. It's called the 5OB, Fundamental Interpersonal Relationships, Orientation Behavior, very small. And we have looked at three fundamental behaviors that people display when they behave in a group. So we are here looking at the interpersonal underworld of the group. What is happening at the level that is below the threshold of consciousness when the individual is functioning in the group? Typically, we speak of work groups, but this can also be other groups. So two people or more in work groups or in also informal groups. But typically, when we say when people come together at the workplace, it could also be if you're studying a course, and people come together for a task. There are three aspects, three needs, three behaviors that need to be dealt with. We have spoken about this in the previous session. One is, first question is, for those who were not there, the first question is, who is in the group and who is out of the group? So when you're forming the group, first question, we decide who is in and who is out. And those who are in the group, do they feel included or not? So the first question is of inclusion. Am I including others or not? Once the group has been formed, then we speak about, okay, so what is the task that everyone is going to do? This is the issue of control. Who is going to do what? The distribution of tasks and activities. Once people have been working together for some time, they start developing relationships, then comes the issue of affection. Am I getting recognized? Am I getting appreciation for what I've done? Does this person like me? This person seems to dislike me? These issues come up. In the previous session, we spoke of inclusion. Today, we will speak about control. So we are looking here at the behavior, basically, the behavior of control. What do we understand by control? What is your experience of control? Yes? Any thoughts? Yes?
Knowing what is going to happen.
Knowing what's going to happen. Okay?
Maybe.
Yes. And so if you want to know what is to happen, how would you behave in a group? So say you are in charge of a group of 3-4 people and you want to know what is going to happen. How would you behave in the group?
Being a leader.
Being a leader? What does that mean to be a leader in a group, for example?
Controlling the group.
Controlling the group. How would you go about controlling the group? How would you go about controlling the group?
Maybe arranging a plan together, uh-huh. or deciding, depending on if you're going to be democratical or if you're going to be, what do you call it? just deciding for yourself.
Okay. Okay. So they could also, what you're saying is, control can also be expressed democratically. And it can also be expressed in a more autocratic manner. There are two dimensions of control, just as we had spoken about two dimensions of inclusion in the previous session. One is this aspect of wanted control. To what extent do we want to be controlled by others? And the other is the aspect of expressed control. To what extent do we want to control others? How much control do we express on people around us, and how much control do we accept from people around us? So what is good and what is bad? Is it good to express control? Is it good to want control? Some people are very comfortable being controlled by others. Some people are not so comfortable being controlled by others. What is your experience around this? Can you identify this within yourself, this behavior of wanting to be controlled or not wanting to be controlled? So the understanding is that some people have a high need actually for wanting to be controlled. They want to be controlled and they're very, very comfortable being controlled. And they actually have a need to be controlled. Some people have a need for expressing more control in controlling others. Some people have a lower need. It is also possible for individuals to have the need for both, to be controlled and to express control. So there are some people, you might find that very strange, right? How can one person express control over others at the same time want to be controlled by others? Does it seem to be conflicting? No? It can also be. It actually is. It can very well be. For example, if you look at the structure of an organization like the army or the police, for example, you find this dynamic very clearly there. Expressing control, and because of the nature of the job, you are required to express a certain amount of regulation and control over others. But at the same time, when it comes to following orders from the top, you know, you also have to be ready to actually take that and then put the order into implementation. So you can have actual jobs, structures of certain jobs that bring in both these aspects within. And of course, within human beings as well, there can be people who have both. You can have, you're okay with expressing control, but you're also okay with accepting control. However, so is control, normally when we speak of control, very often people experience it as a negative experience. Is it necessarily a negative experience? No? Is it? What could be the positive aspects of expressing control? Let's look at the experience of expressed control. And we can have the positive aspects of expressed control as well as the negative aspects of expressed control. So, what would be the experience of a positive expression of control?
Self-control.
Self-control first, of course, that's true. But let's look at, we are looking at interpersonal interactions here, right? So we are looking at, it could also be a relationship between a couple, it could be a group, anything.
People trust a person who controls other people.
Yeah, so there is...
They can predict what...
So
they can put trust in people who control others because they know they don't have to make their own decisions.
When would they trust others? And when would they not trust others? So what form can control take in behavior for people to actually trust or not trust? Yes?
Well, I was thinking of the example you gave of the policeman.
Yeah.
Or a fireman.
Mm-hmm.
In some situations, they exert control.
Yeah.
And it saves the situation because they have the knowledge of what should be done.
So, in some situations, we need regulation. We need to regulate how people are behaving. Otherwise, the whole situation can slip into chaos. We certainly we need to have a sense of direction.
And order.
a direction, order. We need to have a sense of order, and there is the experience of authority. There is the experience of authority. However, the same experience can take a very twisted form. And in the twisted form, we can have the experience of manipulation.
Abuse.
You can have, of course, the experience of abuse or exploitation, whatever you want to call it. You can have the experience of dominance. Some people become very, very dominating. You can have the experience of bossiness. You can have the same expression of control expressed in different ways. And as you said, probably one of the important issues is the leader really trusted? Do the people in the group experience that as a regulation, direction, or do they see that as manipulation and abuse? So this could be, what could be, for example, let's look at the experience of wanted control. So what could be the negative experiences of wanted control and the positive experiences of wanted control? Or is there something like a positive experience of wanted control? I want the others to actually control me, give me that. Can that be a positive? What would be the positive experience of that?
Security.
Sorry?
Security.
Security. Yeah, but what would be the behavior? The behavior of actually accepting control by others.
That you know what your responsibility is.
You know what your responsibility is. What would be the behavior? How would you behave? Yes?
You become passive, you don't have to make any decisions.
Passive, usually people understand. Yeah, but that is that a positive expression? Or?
Well, you could use your time and your energy for something else. Maybe. I don't know.
Yes?
Maybe acceptance.
Acceptance? You were saying something?
Flexibility.
Flexibility, acceptance.
Humility.
Humility. Here you're willing to take the direction. So, of course, there is the experience of obedience because of the... you spoke about humility. And then people spoke about flexibility. There is also the experience of respect. So an order is coming my way, and I accept it. There is acceptance. I don't have so much space, but acceptance of the order, there is flexibility, there is humility, there is obedience, and I follow whatever is given to me because that needs to be done. And on the other hand, when we look at the negative experience, again, we can have the experience of servitude. You're giving in. And then, of course, in that experience, there can be exploitability. Others can, for example, exploit us. When does that happen? When can we experience this negative expression of wanted control? I want others to control me. Yeah? What is operating inside? Any thoughts? Yes?
Fear or insecurity?
Insecurity, fear. Of course, actually, even here, fear could operate, and we will speak about that. Fear, insecurity, then of course there is this sense of, because of the fear and insecurity, perhaps there is the experience of dependence. And I'm afraid of actually, either I'm afraid of taking authority and stepping forward and doing things, and therefore I allow others. But fear is an interesting experience, because we can also have fear behind the expression of dominance and manipulation and abuse and bossiness. It's just expressing itself in a different way. It's expressing itself according to certain personality traits that we have in a more aggressive way. And we understand behind aggression is fear. And behind fear is insecurity. That we understand quite clearly. So it could also express itself in this way, and it could, of course, also express itself in the passive way. The understanding that we have is the very fact that some people are very comfortable taking control and some people are very comfortable expressing control, some people are comfortable doing both, the very fact in itself is neutral. It does not really tell us anything positive or negative. But the way that particular behavior is expressed, the dimensions in which it is expressed, will obviously influence our own effectiveness, our own functioning, and the functioning of people around us. So, these are some behaviors.
Can you spend a minute trying to identify what is your natural tendency? Is your natural tendency to express much more control than take control? Is your natural tendency to take more control? I mean, to accept control rather than express control? Or is your natural tendency neither to want it nor to express it? Some people have that tendency as well. And that, again, that it's, in itself it's neutral. And some people, of course, may have the tendency of doing both. Both taking, accepting control, and expressing control. So we have either high on this or low on this, high on this, low on this, low on both, high on both. Spend a minute reflecting on yourself, looking at both the positive and the negative expressions of wanted and expressed control, and try and identify where you feel you belong. Okay, could you identify yourself where you feel you belong? Anyone who feels that you have both a low need for wanting to be controlled as well as a low need for expressing control? Anyone feels that?
Yes.
Yes? How many of you have been rebellious in your life? Okay, also some others. Yeah, but it's an interesting experience. When I look at my own life, it's something I reflected upon much later. I had both. I wasn't that interested really in this, and neither was I really interested in this. So what happens, the flip side of that is you end up being a rebel because you can't take it and you're not really bothered about doing it. So you end up being a loner and a rebel. Now that in itself, what does it mean? Some would say a negative manifestation of that, but there could also be the positive manifestation of that. And the positive manifestation of that is you're resilient. You become a rebel, and it can be destructive, but on the other hand, you're very independent, and you're resilient, you're tough. So you will not just give in very easily, and neither will you go around manipulating and abusing people. So that in itself, again, doesn't mean anything, whether it is low on both, but it depends on how it is being used. And of course, I've had opportunities to use it in both ways. In the destructive way, as a rebel. Yeah, in school days, you know, you're young and you want to do all sorts of things which you think are important. So you're playing a rebel. But at the same time, once you understand it, the idea here is not really to judge the particular need as such or that particular behavior in isolation. But we take it as a whole behavior which can manifest, express itself in a negative way or a positive way. And the idea is, can I shift from the negative expression to the positive expression? For example, can I shift from being a rebel without a cause, as they say, going around ranting and raving and shouting and demonstrating every chance you get, to actually using that same natural personality trait of yours in a very positive way, of being independent and of being resilient, and of influencing in that very quiet way? That is also possible. Some people might find themselves in this, that they're not really that bothered about controlling and influencing and dominating others, but they're quite comfortable accepting control from others. That in itself, again, doesn't mean it is necessarily wrong or bad. It just means, where am I? Do I find myself shifting here more than this? Or do I find myself working from this space? And can I shift from this expression to this expression? Some people might be a lot more comfortable with this, but then again, do I end up slipping into this side or this side? Which side am I generally operating from? And the normal experience is, because this is a very natural part of us, we experience both sides. We may slip into the negative side a little bit when we are operating from a space of fear and insecurity. But when we are operating from a space of security and self-worth, we may actually function more on this from this space. And similarly, from on the wanted side. The risk that people have, for example, who have a high need for wanted control, one of the risks is that you may slip into this and then people start, you know, misusing, abusing you as a doormat, just abusing you, and you take it. That can be the other side of it. But that in itself does not mean that is, you know, the personality, the basic need itself is wrong. It's a question of shifting. It's a question of shifting. So we are here looking at the behavior. And the behavior is of either expressing control or wanting control. However, underlying the behavior, as we had spoken about the other day, are certain feelings. One way of understanding, especially when the negative expression of either wanted or expressed control is manifesting itself in our behavior and group interaction, is to look at, try and identify what are the feelings underlying the behavior. Where is that behavior really emerging from? What are the feelings? And then underlying the feelings, as we understand, are certain interpersonal needs that are operating. And these needs emerge from our experience of self. So what is my experience of self? How do I experience myself, from which emerges a certain need, from which emerges a certain feeling, from which emerges the behavior? Normally what we observe is the external thing, that is the behavior, but underlying that are certain feelings and needs. One way of understanding and probably working at the level of transforming the behavior, not at a superficial way, but in a deeper, more substantial way, is by trying to identify the feelings and the needs and then going deeper into the experience of self. The experience of self, as we have discussed also in the previous month when we spoke of the unconscious, there are two distinct experiences of self. And so when we look at the experience of self, one is the experience of the ego. That is the experience where the self is identified dependent on the form. The form could be any aspect of my identity. My qualities, my competencies, I am intelligent, I am brave, I am beautiful, I am young, I am old, whatever. Anything that the I is identified with, it's a form. So religion, nation, culture, language, profession. There are forms to which we identify, these forms we cannot control, and therefore the very experience of the egotistical identification or egotistical experience of self is insecurity. So, this is the world, and those of you who've done the Raj Yoga course, we speak about body consciousness. Body consciousness means the identification of the self with all these things that we have in our external world around us, or it could also be with all these qualities and strengths and competencies that I identify with. The other experience of the self is the experience of the soul, that is the experience of the essence that we have discussed, which basically means the experience of eternity, the experience of being indestructible. And this is the experience that we try and emerge in the process of meditation, which automatically, in its very nature, brings about a very deep experience of security. So the question is, which space am I operating from? With respect to control, there is a specific need, according to the theory, there is a specific need underlying control. And that need is, according to this model at least, that need is competence. Competence. Now, what do we understand by competence? Any thoughts? What do we understand by competence?
Having abilities.
Sorry?
Having abilities.
Having certain abilities.
Knowledge.
Knowledge, whatever the abilities could be. It could be knowledge.
Experience.
Yeah. So the question is, we all need to use our competencies. We all need to demonstrate our competencies. We all need to prove our competencies, people would argue. The question is, what is the motive of that? What is the underlying intention actually behind that need? So the understanding is, if I'm operating from the space of the ego, that competence will be more experienced in terms of, I want to demonstrate this. I want to demonstrate my competence. However, from the experience of the soul, any thoughts on how you will experience this need when you're operating from the space of security, soul consciousness? Yes?
You want to share.
You want to share, you want to use it. So we have this need, but the question is here, you want to use, you want to share. This is a need that you have, but you would like to use it in a certain way. So the question is, underlying my behavior, are the intentions to demonstrate, prove my competence, or are the intentions to use and share my competence? And a lot of the anxiety that we experience, if you trace it down to the level of core needs, would come when? When you want to demonstrate or you want to use and share? In your experience, where would it come from? It would come from here? When you want to use and share?
Mm-hmm.
Why would that really result in any tension?
Attention.
Attention.
Oh, what did
you say? No, I asked tension, not attention. I was asking the stress and the tension. Ask yourself, for example.
Demonstration, of course.
Demonstration. Proving the self. I want to prove that I have this particular competence. That competence could be knowledge, intelligence, whatever competence it may be. I want to demonstrate, I want to prove. And therefore, when I'm operating from this level, the feelings that will emerge. And now, we try and capture the feelings here through a question. What would be the question you would ask yourself if you are operating from this space? I want to demonstrate and prove my need.
Fear, maybe.
There is an experience of fear. There could be an experience, because you're coming from insecurity, right? So there could be the experience of fear, as you have mentioned, the feeling of fear. Anything else?
Am I good enough?
Am I good enough? And therefore, one of the ways in which that particular question will manifest itself would be, am I good enough? And therefore, I want to be good enough. And therefore, do I have the control? Do I have the influence? And therefore, here I'm operating from the space of, do I have the influence or control? Because I want to demonstrate this particular need. And then this is going to affect my behavior, and the manifestation is usually it will come out in the negative way because I'm operating from a space of fear. I'm operating from a space of security. And so here the understanding is I want to share certain competencies that I have. What would be the feeling emerging from that?
Would be love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
I want to involve.
You want to involve, experience of love. There is an experience of stability, whatever you want to call it. Something, you wanted to say something?
It's a feeling of connected or, I don't know.
Yeah. So, you might want, so you, what you're saying is there is an experience of connectedness.
Yeah.
And of course we can add, but you know, we don't have such a big board here, so we will have to just... So one of the questions that I would ask is, does the situation need my influence? Do I have influence? Egocentrism. Does the situation actually need my influence? Does the situation need me to behave in a way in which I'm supposed to express my control? So for example, here I would ask, does the situation need influence? and this is going to affect my behavior. So when I'm operating from the level of the soul, I have the experience of the positive expressions. When I'm operating from the level of the ego, I have the negative expressions of control. So control in itself, again, as we have mentioned, is not an issue. The issue is, where am I operating from? And how do I go deep within my experience of the self to identify what are the needs that I am working on? Where are these needs emerging? And can I bring about a shift in the experience of control? Any thoughts at this point? Anything you would like to ask regarding the experience of control? Yes.
You're part of the situation yourself.
Mm.
And so the needs for what is needed in the situation should also include yourself.
Yes, of course.
And so it seems to me that maybe this ego has in some way gets into the situation also and has to be taken care of.
Yes, it will. It usually does get into the situation. But the question, the understanding here is, can the feelings that are being generated, if I shift to from the egotistical experience of the self, where I am totally involved in the sense of attached to the situation, then I experience the negative dimensions of the experience of control. But if I can shift myself away, and where I have a sense of detachment, at the same time involvement with the situation, I will not slip in to the effect or the influence of the ego. But again, here, ego in itself is a neutral word. Here, when we speak about ego, we are speaking about that basic obsession with the self. The self, the desire to either self-validate or to protect the self. So this is the desire for self-protection or self-validation. Protect myself. So if I want to protect myself, say, now, let's look at this. Let's look at this whole process. So I am operating from the space of insecurity. I would like to demonstrate my competence, but I am not sure that I actually have that competence. And when I'm operating from this space, instead of using my authority to actually develop that competence or to use the abilities that I have, what eventually can happen? I give in, of course, to the feeling of fear. I ask myself at a subconscious level, do I have the influence? The answer is no, or that's the answer I get in my mind. The deeper question I have asked myself is, do I have the competence? And the answer there is no. So the answer could be, do I have the competence? Yes. Do I have the influence? No. Do I have the competence? No. And so do I have the influence? No, in any case. But since I don't have the competence, what do? I give in. I let others control the situation. I play the victim, because then I have an excuse for failure. So at a deep level, I want to demonstrate my competence. But since I am not, first of all, sure of myself, and I could be operating from the space where I am focused on self-validation, so if I am unable to demonstrate my competence, that means I will be worthless, whatever the experience is inside. And so therefore, give in. Let the situation control you. Let others take the initiative. Let me not bother. Let me not get involved. And so this could be the very negative experience of wanted control. You completely give yourself up to the others, to the situation. And then things go wrong, things fail. Well, you were not involved anyway. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think about if you're over here, under expressed and then manipulation, I think about people who are very weak or play weak. It also can give you a very big control over others.
Yeah, I think it's a very deep point. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is, by playing the victim, you're actually expressing a kind of control.
Yeah.
You are, you're right. You're very, very right.
Because maybe other people
jump around for you all the time.
You're right. Actually, even through that behavior, you're actually expressing control. That's the funny thing. In interpersonal interactions, whatever we do, we have influence. If we don't do anything, we still have influence. As you've said. And you can actually abuse that or use it constructively. So, for example, we have this behavior of passive-aggressive, manifest. Have you seen that passive-aggressive behavior? Do you know what it means, passive aggression? For example, okay, passive aggression is a very interesting phenomenon, and we all experience it sometime. Say, for example, the wife is going out, and she asks the husband to take care of the baby. The husband doesn't want to take care of the baby. And the husband is angry with the wife for whatever it is. And he doesn't want to express it. He doesn't want to express it because he's afraid that, whatever fears are there in his mind, he will lose her or whatever it is. So he doesn't want to express it, but he's carrying the anger. And he doesn't want to do that task of taking care of the baby. But passive aggression would be the wife goes out and comes back and the house is in a mess. So the dishes are unwashed, there is dirt and there is laundry all over the place, and it's a big mess. Why has the husband done that? Sorry?
To force the wife not to repeat the situation again.
You don't repeat the situation again. To make it, to communicate that it's actually going to be much more difficult for you if you leave me with the baby than if you just took care of the baby or made some arrangements for the baby. But I don't want to express that directly. That would be terrible. That would be mean, right? So at a subconscious way, I try and deal with my own guilt. I try and deal in a very twisted way, and that's passive aggression. So aggression that does not really appear to be aggression, that appears to be very innocent. So the wife comes home and he says, "Oh, darling, what to do? I did my best, but this baby was behaving like this, and this happened, and that happened." Lots of excuses, but you end up actually creating a situation. So actually, you're right. When you said we can, through not doing or doing, things like that, you're actually expressing control. And what you're doing there basically is you're manipulating. You're expressing control, you're manipulating. So the manipulation can take form also in a very passive way. By playing the victim, by playing this dependent person, I am actually manipulating the situation. So that the other ends up doing all the things that I don't want to do. And therefore the other takes the responsibility for those things and I am free from those responsibilities. That can also very well happen. The issue in relationships is over, once it happens, twice it happens, over a period of time when people start behaving like that, you can usually find out, you sense something is wrong, something is not quite right. Is it easy for people to respect others who play the victim? Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen that? In a close relationship, one is playing the victim and the other is respecting that person.
No.
Of course, if the person is respecting, operating from a deep sense of self-respect, you would argue that the person will not even allow the other to actually play the victim. They will not play along with that game. And you'd probably put a stop to that. And so sometimes it can happen that you may have some person with a negative expression of expressed control and the other person in the relationship with a negative experience of wanted control. So they fit hand in glove. One wants to be abused and exploited. The other wants to abuse and exploit. And so they feel they are a very good match for each other because they are fulfilling each other's needs. But obviously, in that experience, we understand very clearly they are losing their integrity, their authenticity. They are losing their sense of self-respect. You wanted to say something? Yes.
Is this expression of playing the victim? I mean, I can think of very obvious situations where this
yes.
is going on. But there might be situations where people are not realizing to what degree someone is playing the victim.
Yes.
Giving away their power.
Yeah.
Is that because this two-person play is going on?
It could very well be. It could very well be. People are not aware really of what's happening. And the reality is, as we understand it, especially from a spiritual perspective, the understanding is no soul, no human being in his or her right mind would get into this negative experience. Mm. Because we don't like it. Do we like to be dependent and fearful and exploited and in servitude? Do we like that? Will anyone here say, I like this experience? And the same thing, do we like it when people say we are manipulative and abusive? And it's not a very... Anyone would say, yeah, I like that experience? Not really. The problem, yes?
But hasn't it very, very much to do with your childhood? For instance, if you haven't learned this to be self-responsible, isn't it because there's missed something
in the upbringing in the childhood?
Yeah.
It could very well be, but the question is, what am I going to do? Sit and blame my mother? Sit and blame my father? Oh, I am like this because of them. Maybe true. Obviously, our experiences contribute to our, you know, to our upbringing and our personality in many ways, our behaviors, our needs. But then what is the authentic response there? To sit and blame the past? And then how do I move forward? And by sitting and blaming the past, what am I doing really? I'm playing the victim. I'm giving up my authority.
But how do you deal with people who are like that?
The question is,
people who are like that, how do you
the question,
in a good way?
Yeah, you know, our focus here is, of course, on the self.
Yeah.
So the question is, where am I? What tendencies do I have? Where do I seem to fall? In towards the negative side, what can I do about it? As far as others' behaviors are concerned, of course, that's very nice to think of others, but, you know, I would... We are focused on the self. So we're looking at our own behavior. Obviously, others would need awareness. They need to bring about this shift. So, psychology would say, well, this is how it is. This is how it is. People express or want behavior control. There are certain feelings underlying that. This is not an aspect that psychology really covers. This is coming from a spiritual perspective. From a psychological angle, this is what is operating. This is reality. This is how it is. People express the behavior of control. Behind that control, they say, okay, this is a question of having influence, experiencing power. And that comes from, I have a need to demonstrate my capabilities, and I want to demonstrate my competence, because it's functioning from the space of the ego. Psychology is a very good understanding of how the ego functions. And that's good. We need that understanding. But that in itself doesn't tell us what we can do at this level. Can we shift? And this is where spirituality comes in, which tells us, yes, you can shift. You can bring about a radical shift in the basic experience of self, which would bring about a change in your need, and then your feelings, and then your behavior. But if I want to change my behavior, and I try and control the behavior superficially, that's never going to happen, really, in a sustainable way. For a few days, I would do it. I can fool myself. I can fool others for a few days. Eventually, that is not sustainable. Because the underlying need has not been answered. And the underlying need can only be answered if I go deep into the experience of the self and I find a way of satisfying that need. If I don't satisfy this need of feeling worthy, feeling secure, competence is about self-worth, right? I want to demonstrate my self-worth. I am something. I have a say. If I don't find a need of satisfying that need, if I don't find a way of satisfying that need internally, I will become a subject to this process again and again. I will find the need to demonstrate it, prove that competence, whatever it may be for me. And if I am focused on demonstration of my need and proving and validating my need, I will be focused on self-protection or self-validation or self-protection, and I will give in to fear, and then I'm concerned about my own egocentric feelings about, do I have the influence, do I have the power, can I demonstrate, how can I demonstrate? If I feel I can, I will take control. If I feel I can't, I will give up control. And so therefore the process of transformation, as we understand it, goes at a level that is deeper, much, much deeper than even the level of feeling and need. You go into the deep experience of the self. And the experience of fullness and completeness that we can experience through the process of meditation, in the experience of soul consciousness that we speak about, is, as we understand it then, probably the only way of really satisfying that need of experiencing self-worth from deep within. And when you do that, then you have the need to use your competence, not to demonstrate or to prove your competence. And this is a very thin line between the two. But the way that we can understand from which space I am operating is the experience of fear or the experience of stability and calmness. And all of us have been on both sides, probably. Yes? We can. So I identify the fear, then I know from which space I am operating. And if I'm operating from the space, I don't just stop here or here. I go deep inside, bring about the shift. Bring about this shift, experience myself to be contented and full deep inside. Automatically, I come to a state of stability. And the question I will ask myself is, do I really need to demonstrate my influence here? Or? And then I'll automatically express the behavior of control in a way that is acceptable, that is healthy for me and for the group. And when I'm functioning in the group, then the group also, obviously I have better interpersonal relationships in the group. Task effectiveness is better because I am not bothered about demonstrating and proving myself. I'm really looking at what are the needs of the situation. And therefore, I'm using either the behavior of expressing control, giving direction, regulating, and taking the risk of failing. And when I'm operating from the level of the soul, there is no real risk of failing because what happens? Okay, so I do my best and I fail. It is not a reflection on the self. The moment I see that as a reflection on the self, I am focused on demonstration and I'm operating from the space of the ego. So the spiritual practice is about looking at where I am and bringing about that shift. Yes? Does it make sense? Yes?
Yes. It's just shifting. It's just pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very simple. But as they say, no pain, no gain. What do I do? How do I bring about a transformation? And sometimes it takes a long time sometimes to bring about that transformation. But every time I feel that anxiety, I feel that fear, I feel the insecurity, what is the other option? Given to that insecurity, given to the fear, or superficially given to certain behaviors that will make me believe the insecurity has gone away? Can we do that? Let me give you a practical example. I'll come back to you. I'll just give a practical example. A couple of years ago, I was working with a manager, coaching, leadership coaching, right? And so we have this process of looking at interpersonal needs because the person is operating in a group. Now, this manager had a very high need for expressed control. When it came to wanted control, it was like moderate, but expressed control, very high. The other need that we spoke about, the other interpersonal needs that we speak about, inclusion, involving others, and the other need of affection, both were low. So that means the person did not have the need of appreciating others or involving them in the process. That need he did not have, but he had the need to control very, very strongly. And the problem that was happening was the person had to select a new team member. There were 5 people working in the team. And a new member had to come in because the work was a lot. So then the boss, the superiors in the organization, they decided we need more people to actually have a more equitable distribution of the workload. So a new member was supposed to come in. And this was the time that we engaged in this process of coaching. So this person wants to say that, okay, so I feel this is what we need to do. We need a new member. I have written the job description and the job description is ready to go out. Now I ask him, okay, how many people are there in your team? So he says there are 5 people. And who is this person going to be working with? So he says he's going to be working with those, with 4 of those people he's going to be working. Will the person be directly reporting to you? Yeah, how often will you see that person? Maybe once a week. How often will the others see him or her, whoever is going to join? Every day. So the person who is going to come in is going to be working with them. How have you involved the others in the process of deciding what kind of a person you're going to bring in? No. But that's okay. Now the question is why? The question is why? What do you suppose was the reason there?
You hadn't thought of it.
Sorry?
You hadn't thought of it.
Yeah. You're right, actually, because of the low need for involving others, he had not thought of it. When I gave him that suggestion, he still didn't want to think about it. Why was that happening?
Because he was the
kind of manipulation.
And when we explored this, something very interesting came up. When we explored this further, the fear, the person who I am going to recruit is going to sit and talk to those four people 5 days a week, if not more. I better make sure I know what this person is all about, so I can feel secure that, you know, they are not going to do things which are going to go out of my control. So I want someone who I am comfortable with, I feel safe with, because basically I don't trust my other group members. And when that came out, the person obviously was not very comfortable with this understanding that I don't trust my... He never thought of it that way. But the reality was the lack of trust. And the lack of trust coming from what? Again, the lack of trust is not the issue. The issue is, where is it coming from? Coming from the fear, coming from the desire to control all processes, coming from that basic need to demonstrate my competence and therefore be successful, coming, of course, from this space. Of course, in a work situation, I can't teach him meditation and ask him to become soul conscious. Unfortunately, I can't do that. And if I do that, I can't charge money for it. And if I don't charge, then what's the point? Oh, it's very complicated with me sometimes. So what do I do? Then I have to sort of work at a level that is manageable. But yes, they do understand when you speak about this process of shifting, at least at this level. Shifting, for example, I'm focused on demonstrating and proving my abilities, and therefore I'm giving into fear, and therefore I'm giving into processes of manipulation or whatever, dominance or bossiness, and trying to control a process which eventually is going to work against me. Because the effectiveness of my team is a reflection of, obviously, my managerial effectiveness. And if the people in the team are not going to get along very well, and I'm the one who is selected, eventually it's all going to come back to me. But at that level, as you, one of you mentioned, the awareness is not there. The awareness is not there because the needs are hidden. And I'm not really aware of the space of insecurity from which I'm operating fully, consciously. I'm not very aware of it. Or I don't want to think about it because that is very difficult. That is painful. How do I manage that? So I just give in again and again to the behaviors. Manipulation, dominance, bossiness, try and control. And in that process, influence my own effectiveness and damage my own effectiveness and my efficiency in the organization. And so the manager has to learn to, yes, so what would you do now with the manager? What would you do? You tell him, move from here to here?
Why can't you talk about sharing and using?
Yes, of course I do that. I just don't speak about the soul, that's
No.
That's okay, of course, we speak about that. But the question is, what would be the easy way for that manager who is operating from the space of insecurity to actually deal with that issue? Give up control, become humble, obedient, flexible, generous. What would be the easy way for that person to shift? What would be workable and manageable and practical for him? One answer is, make that shift reasonable. That is, from here to here. That's all. Involve the others, regulate the process, direct the process. Use your authority in a positive way to regulate and direct the process. Because the reality is, if someone comes in who is very, very different, who cannot get along with the manager very well, in any case the effectiveness will be lost. So if he gives away the entire responsibility to the team to select the person, that might eventually anyway affect the effectiveness of the team because the manager is also involved. So he needs to be involved, but he needs to involve others. And because this is a space, so if you tell someone who's operating from a space of insecurity, okay, today, become secure, it doesn't really work. The person has to move in baby steps, one step at a time. So I'm operating, the guy accepts, I'm operating from the space of insecurity, but how do I make that anxiety manageable? So I don't totally give up control, I'll end up feeling miserable, I won't be able to concentrate on my work. What do I do? And say, okay, you shift from here to here. Involve others, but be involved in the process. Regulate, direct. Check with your team members what they are doing. Express, use your authority to express your own needs. Express that these are my needs, those are your needs, how do we sit together and how do we work on this together? So one reasonable way of bringing about this shift in a practical way is if I'm operating from this, one step would be, from this, can I shift to this? From this, can I shift to this? Having done that, having brought about this shift, then I can look at the process of addressing the deeper issues, the deeper anxieties, the deeper needs, and trying to bring about that shift. But this requires spiritual practice. And if I can do this, then of course this process becomes easier, more automatic, more natural, and I don't have to spend so much of time on that. Does it make sense? Okay? Yes.
Could it be difficult for you to support him instead of control him? Because his insecurity would also keep you insecure, doesn't it?
If I'm operating from this space, it will make me insecure. If I'm not operating from this space, it will not make me insecure. So for example, if I'm operating from this space, my competence as a coach, right? My competence as a leadership coach is online. And so my behaviors would then be influenced by that need, and in which case I will end up being a miserable business coach anyway. So my level, of course, would be also to look at the same processes and bring about this shift and work from this space so that I can actually help them. So where am I? Am I bothered about really demonstrating and proving my own abilities? If I am, then I am giving into the same process. What am I coaching anyway? Okay. So there are two levels, you could say, of addressing these things. The other, the superficial but practical level, which is also needed sometimes, is at the level of the behavior. Can I just bring about this shift from here to here and from here to here? So I make the whole process more manageable. But at the same time, looking at the deeper needs and the deeper issues underlying that and trying to bring about this shift from a spiritual perspective. So from a psychological perspective, I bring about that shift. And from a spiritual perspective, I try and bring about that deeper shift. So over a period of time, and this I will have to do repeatedly, again and again and again. Every time I feel the fear, every time I feel the insecurity and the anxiety, the first step is awareness. If I'm not aware, I will become the victim of the negative behaviors again and again. So the first issue is using this model to be aware. Second, recognizing the fear when it is operating in me and when I'm operating from the space of insecurity. Third, using that recognition to actually bring about this shift. But this requires, again, the knowledge of the soul, the knowledge of God and all that stuff that we speak about, to really bring about the shift and to experience that state of fullness and stability within, which can give us a sustainable control over control. Okay? Thank you. Any questions? No. Next week, the talk will be back in the library, so please don't turn up here. Last time we did that once, we shifted the talk here for one day, and the next day many people end up coming here. So it's just a one-time thing. We shifted it today, but next week and onwards, it will be back in the library. So you are welcome to come there. We will look at the issue of affection next week. So in groups, what do people do with this need for affection, both in terms of expressing it and wanting it? And again, just as we saw in the case of the need for competence behind the issue of control, we will try and identify the need behind affection and how can we work at that level of using. Okay, thank you. You will finish with some meditation as usual. Sometimes the experience of control lies in the giving up of control, in surrendering. And the experience of meditation
is actually, if you look at it, a very deep process of surrender. Surrender to the deep experience of being a soul, which means you remove your identification to everything that we usually identify ourselves with throughout the day. Just give it up. And if you look at it, we keep thinking about all these things throughout the day, our responsibilities, relationships, activities. If you really look at it, we are thinking about all these things because we want to control them. Because we want to create a sense of security for ourselves. And these are not things that we can really control in a sustainable way, and therefore the insecurity will always be there. And so this whole process of actually giving up control over all these things and experiencing the soul to be just eternity, just light, giving up control, surrendering to the experience of belonging to God, and just staying in that experience of absolute surrender is actually giving up control over this physical existence. But when we do that, then we actually experience the deep, deep control that comes from the experience of stability and security that is a part of the experience of being a soul and a child of God. So let us practice this. Once again, I give up, surrender all thoughts of this physical existence. All those aspects of my life that I try to control. My relationships, responsibilities, activities. Letting go of all these identifications of the self. I go deep within to connect with the source. Experiencing my entire existence, converging into a point. A point of eternity. A point of infinity. I experience as though this physical body and the physical world, all these things that I try and control, have disappeared from my consciousness. All that remains is the soul, the spirit, a point of light. And in this consciousness of my eternal self, I see myself beyond this physical world of matter. In that world of light, that is the eternal home of the soul. And I see myself in the safe, secure embrace of the light of the Supreme. And I surrender myself completely to this experience of a communion with the Supreme. Two beings of light. Two sparkling stars. Indivisible, indestructible. Eternal. And in this total surrender of control, I discover absolute control, complete stability, the mind and the body absolutely still. My consciousness beyond, in that world of light. In the presence of the Supreme Light. Holding on to this deep silence and this deep light. I allow myself to return once again to this room, to this body. This physical costume of mine. And once again I take my place in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes. Listening through these ears. I, the soul, the master, in total control of my mind, of my body. I, the soul, a being of light, indivisible, indestructible, a being of power, a being of peace, Om Shanti. Thank you.
Thank you.
Start going there.